Morning, everybody.
Good morning.
It's good to have everybody here. Glad that you guys are safe. Harrowing ride in last Sunday. For those of you who don't know, they got hit last Sunday on their way in, so.
Oh.
It's kind of day a lot like today.
It was.
A lot
like today. Just that enough snow to make it, you know, a little iffy here and there and what have you. So anyway, we're glad everybody's here, and everybody should have in front of you a set of notes for lesson 280. Assessing the printed history of the King James text. We're still talking about the PCE, vintage Bibles. My goal is to wrap this up in the next week or two, hopefully, and then move on. So let's get right into it. If you're joining us right now on the live stream and you would like to follow along with the notes, you can go to gracelifebiblechurch.com, scroll down, click on the link under recent sermons for March 1st, and you can load the notes and follow along with us there if you would like to do that. Okay, so let's just get right into it. Lesson 280, Assessing the Printed History of the King James Text, PCE Vintage Bibles. In Lesson 279, we evaluated the historical and theological framework Matthew Vischer constructs in Vintage Bibles to support his pure Cambridge thesis. We observed that his model moves far beyond editorial preference, grounding the PCE in a metaphysical narrative in which a perfect heavenly archetype of Scripture is said to manifest on earth through Cambridge's early 20th century printings. Vischer's uses this framework to interpret the history of the King James Bible as a providential process culminating in the PCE, Pure Cambridge Edition, which he treats as the divinely intended standard English Bible. So again, that's review. At the same time, our historical survey highlighted major difficulties with this narrative. Cambridge University Press did not intentionally produce a uniquely, quote, pure edition, nor is there documentary evidence of a single editorial event creating the PCE. Instead, Cambridge continued printing multiple textual streams, Victorian, near PCE, and PCE, well into the 20th century, and the identification of the PCE itself did not arise until early in the 2000s. Claims about wartime plate changes, editorial motives, and providential textual gathering were shown to be theological interpretations layered onto a far more complex and varied print history. So in other words, what we observed is he interpreting data in a way that fits his conclusions? That's essentially what we observed, right? With these findings in view, we now turn to chapters 3, 4, and 5 of Vintage Bibles, where Vischer develops the core of his argument, defining the PCE, cataloging its printed witnesses, and analyzing the stylistic and material features of Cambridge's vintage, quote, vintage editions. These chapters form the practical backbone of the PCE system, laying out the markers, editions, and physical characteristics that Vischer believes authenticate the PCE as the perfected form of the King James text. In this lesson, we will examine those claims in detail, evaluate their historical foundations, and consider how they function within the broader providential narrative introduced in Lesson 279. So again, if you're just joining us today for the first time, we're right in the middle of unpacking a specific view of the King James Bible that exists through the ministry of Bible Protector and Matthew Vischer. Now, we finished the third bullet, right?
Yeah.
An extended appendix is included at the end of this lesson, see page 17. So the reason these notes are so long is because I've attached an appendix here that I do not intend to cover in the teaching of the class, okay? I might make a separate standalone video just on the appendix. I haven't decided, but it starts on page 17. Okay, so an extended appendix is included at the end of this lesson, providing a detailed response to Matthew Vischer's February 23, 2026 blog post, Pointless Points. It interacts directly with his claims and clarifies how the evidence presented in Lesson 279, that's from last week, addresses his objections. Unless otherwise noted, all citations in this lesson are taken from Vintage Bibles, okay? And then there's the disclaimer again. I'm not going to waste time reading it yet again. You guys pretty much know what it is, as does anybody who has been paying attention. So everybody go to page 2. All right, any questions or comments about the introduction? No?
Is the pointless points something that...
Pointless points, he wrote... early last week in response to my lesson from last Sunday, lesson 279. Okay? So the appendix, starting on page 17, is me directly responding to what he said in Pointless Points. So if you want to be edified and encouraged, then read it. If not, it probably doesn't matter to you if you're not following the overall, you know, back and forth as we've been discussing this issue. Okay? So, vintage Bibles. Thanks for that question, though, Amy. All right, so chapter 3 of Vintage Bibles contends that the PCE, and by the way, I have my copy. This is Vintage Bibles right here. I have printed the whole thing out, read it, marked it up, and thoroughly engaged with its content before writing any notes at all. It's been a long time in the process on all of this backstory. Chapter 3 of Vintage Bibles contends that the PCE functions as a providentially preserved jot and tittle standard of the King James Bible, an editorial form established in Cambridge printing circa 1910 to 1950, and identifiable by historical tests. Example, Or Sheba at Joshua 19:2, capital S on Spirit at Matthew 4:1, Mark 1:12, Flieth at Nahum 3:16. These are just a few of the 12, okay, that we've talked about at length. Each argued as restoring textual and theological coherence across canonical cross-references. Example, Luke 4's Spirit Christology, where Luke 4:1 is quoting similar things or referencing similar things to Matthew and Mark, etc. Just talking there generally and not getting into the details of what he says about that. And the Semitic precision of biblical English, cliffs with a T-S versus cliffs with an F-S at the end. So one of those is precisely accurate and the other one is not, according to Verschoor's argumentation, thereby serving the church's mandate to teach, quote, whatsoever I have commanded you, Matthew 28:20, with exactitude. Okay? So in other words, does it have to read in these ways in order to convey the exact sense, according to what Verschoor argues? Okay? So there can be no variation in these things and still have the exact sense of Scripture be communicated according to his argumentation. On this account, the PCE's authority is not novelism, but reception. It regularizes earlier Cambridge, Victorian, and Oxford divergences by reasserting 1611 orthography or correcting printerly drift, embodying a praxis of preservation in print culture that aligns with claims of inerrant verbal preservation to the jot and tittle for liturgical and devotional life. That's pages 61 through 66. So all those numbers in parentheses, again, are the page numbers from Vintage Bibles, okay? The chapter narrates a twofold economy of preservation, the century-long witness of accurately typeset Cambridge Bibles, particularly in their cameo, turquoise, pit minion editions, etc., okay, as the ordinary means by which the Spirit mediates the Scriptures to the nations, and a critical restitution in the early 2000s, resolving intramural PCE microvariants, punctuation, italics, orthography, into a scrupulous digital text, arguably the most exact public representation of those vintage printings. Conversely, the post-1985 Cambridge drift, example, the capitalizing of S on Spirit in 1 John 5:8, and inconsistent changes at Acts 11:12 and Acts 11:28, is framed as a lapse in institutional memory that risks obscuring the church's access to the precise words in English. Hence the chapter's theological imperative, return to and propagate the PCE as the normative ecclesial text whose minor editorial decisions safeguard doctrinal clarity, universal usability, and the integrity of the King James Bible's received form. So that's a summary basically of what chapter 3 is about. Okay? So is it basically more of the same type of argumentation? Is the PCE uniquely pure to the exclusion of all other King James Bible printings? The only problem is there anything in history that matches his edited text? No. Okay? Chapter 3 explains what the PCE is, how to identify it, why it differs from other King James Bible editions, and the process for ensuring its accuracy. The PCE is described as a specific editorial form of the King James Bible printed by Cambridge University Press from about 1910 to 1999. Although widely used during the 20th century, it was identified and named only between the year 2000 and 2004 by Matthew Vershore and the elders of Victory Faith Center in Geelong, Australia. They compiled key textual markers to distinguish the PCE from Oxford editions, Victorian Cambridge editions, and modern altered forms. Okay? So, did anyone ever in history before the year 2000 identify any stream of the Cambridge printing as pure Cambridge? No. No one ever did that in history until Vershore and his colleagues at Victory Faith Center did it between the year 2000 and the year 2004. Okay, any comments there? No? Okay, bottom of page 2. Consider the following citation from page 59. So this is me quoting him. Quote, "The Pure Cambridge Edition is a name given to the specific editorial set of choices or edition as printed by Cambridge in many of its King James Bible editions throughout the 20th century. Page 3. The Pure Cambridge Edition was published by Cambridge between approximately 1910 and 1999. While it has been in long common usage, it was only identified between 2000 and 2004 by the Christian ministers at the Australian Church and given that identifying name." So is he admitting that no one called it this before they named it that? Okay. A list of passages to look up in any edition was given that would identify the Pure Cambridge Edition in comparison to various other contemporary editions at that time, end quote. That's page 59. So here's my comment underneath. The passage quoted above argues that the PCE is a long-standing but only recently recognized editorial form of the King James Bible. A text printed by Cambridge from about 1910 to 1999, whose consistent readings were later identified between 2000 and 2004 through comparison text by Matthew Vershore and Victory Faith Center. Within the chapter's framework, this late identification is portrayed as part of God's providential preservation and unveiling of a purified, standardized English scripture whose distinctive readings later explain on pages 60 through 61 reveal its accuracy, consistency, and theological correctness. So, did anybody for the duration of the 20th century know anything about this?
Nope.
No. Were people reading Cambridge Bibles, and did they know anything about the PCE?
Nope.
Did Cambridge know anything about the PCE?
Nope.
Cambridge didn't even know anything about the PCE. These guys retroactively identify the text. Okay? So after the above citation, Vershore presents his list of 12 PCE readings along with Ezra 2:26, Geba, and Acts 11:12, lowercase spirit, added for good measure. Immediately following the 12 reading list, he states, quote, "These tests do not necessarily reflect differences between itself and the 1769 edition, nor between itself and the Cambridge Concord edition from the 1960s. It is, of course, not a list of all differences in editions, just a few key ones. The argument for the Pure Cambridge edition is that it is right in every instance in its editorial choices. The texts are not specifically designed to be examples of this, but we shall examine some of the most prominent examples." Huh? If it's not what it's for, then I don't understand what the list is for. Am I crazy there? Does everybody see why that would be a confusing statement? Yeah.
It sounds like he's claiming that they're inspired.
He is walking a line of, he is implicitly saying something along those lines without explicitly doing so. And I believe that the ambiguity is intentional. Okay? So let's go on. I think you'll see more of that as we go on. All the differences between PCEs are not confined to the 12 reading list, i.e., other differences exist outside the 12 reading checklist. In a subsection titled Variations Resolved, Vershore states the following regarding his work as copy editor of the definitive PCE text. Can we add a the there, Mike?
Yep.
So here's the quote, beginning of the quote. Quote, "Knowing that the Pure Cambridge edition was correct was one thing, but to have..." So how does he know it's correct?
He said so.
Yeah.
Because they said so.
He's the authority.
Okay, unless there's some sort of divine unction here on them to convey this to them, which he denies they are claiming, which I still think is, which I'll show you later on, I think is a misrepresentation of things that they actually do say in print, okay? Knowing that the pure Cambridge edition was correct was one thing, but to have a typographically accurate copy was another. So they know the pure Cambridge is right without having an exact copy of it. Isn't that what he's admitting? Okay? This was the project undertaken by the author in the early 2000s until he published copies of it on his BibleProtector.com website. He did this by comparing many electronic file copies together and finding variations. Then there was the resolution of those variations by comparing to multiple printed editions of vintage Bibles from Cambridge. The result was a critical presentation of vintage Bibles in a digital format. Top page 4. Still the same quote. Due to rigorous checking methods, all textual and punctual places were resolved, and later the italics as well. So we haven't even talked about the italics, but is he making italic adjustments, adjustments to the italics, okay? This meant discovering and resolving any variation that existed within the pure Cambridge edition printings. This discovering and resolving. So they know the PCE is 100% true, even though they're now finding variations, and they're discovering them even, and then he is going to resolve them. This is his own testimony. This is not me putting words in his mouth or propagandizing on his, you know, against him. This is what he's saying. It may be a fact that anywhere in any of the vintage Bibles, there might be some error of the press, like a missing full stop, end of mark, cameo 16, reference 1936. So he's referencing a specific one that apparently has one in the book of Mark. Or the word mighty, spelt mighty with a V at the end, at Jeremiah 48:41, as seen in the cameo text and octavos from the 1960s to the 1990s. There are places where variations are more deliberate because they appear in multiple editions or in other editions of the King James Bible. The following is a list of variations within vintage Bibles, as is strictly limited to the pure Cambridge copies printed by Cambridge. That's a quote from page 61 and 62. Here's my comment. This means that after determining which readings belong to the PCE, Verschuer still had to establish a perfectly accurate master text, since even genuine vintage PCE printing sometimes contains small errors of the press. By comparing multiple electronic files against many printed Cambridge Bibles, he resolved every textual, punctuation, and italics variation, producing a consolidated digital edition that reflects the quote that reflects the true PCE rather than the accidental printing mistakes. So did the true PCE, the way he's defining it, even exist in history before he created it? No. Within chapter 3, the reader is given no independent or scholarly proof that the author's editorial decisions are uniquely correct. Instead, Verschuer offers assurances grounded in his own theological premise that the PCE is already the providentially preserved text, combined with his claim of exhausted collation across multiple electronic files and many vintage Cambridge printings to eliminate press errors. He reinforces this by appealing to historical continuity within earlier Cambridge practices and selected 1611 readings, presenting his digital construction as the purified form that vintage Bibles collectively witness to. Thus, the evidence consists not of external verification, but of theological conviction, procedural thoroughness, and the narrative that Cambridge's long custodianship culminates in the PCE he, that should say, has constructed, not reconstructed. That end one, we need to change to constructed. Okay, any comments or questions? Here's my question. If I were you guys, and I've been you guys, I've read this months ago and read it more than once. How does he know any of this? How does he definitively know anything that he's telling us right now? Other than he just says so. And it fits with his theological schema. I don't get how he's proved any of this. Okay.
Such a libertarian, you can see.
Nate is making a joke because he wrote an article accusing me of being a libertarian, which I'm not going to get into or get way into weeds. So thanks for bringing that up, Nate. Any other comments before we move on?
Yeah, on page 3 at the bottom, it says there was a resolution of these variations. Resolution, what were the guidelines for these resolutions?
Right. He is resolving them by his own criteria.
Right.
That's why I said at the very beginning of this that his 12 reading checklist is his own editorial preference. Unless he's going to claim divine revelation or some sort of unction upon himself for how he knows, which he isn't wanting to do, he'll just say this is providence. Providence reveals this, which is why I said that he's using providence as an epistemic insert to take the place of divine revelation so that fewer people will object to what he's actually saying. Okay? Anyway, bottom of page 4. Verschoor routinely refers to himself as fulfilling the role of, quote, copy editor in creating the electronic PCE text file. For example, at the very beginning of Vintage Bibles, he states the following on page 3, quote, Matthew Verschoor is the copy editor of the exactly correct electronic text, he says 2007 this time. Earlier I recall reading 2006, but we won't say more about that. Of the Pure Cambridge edition of the King James Version of the Holy Bible. So he's saying he's the copy editor of the exactly correct Bible, edition of the King James Bible. The Pure Cambridge edition appeared and was represented in a body of vintage Bibles printed by Cambridge University Press throughout most of the 20th century. And again, the only ones that are vintage are the ones that match his 12 PCE requirement. Everything else is not vintage. Convenient the way you can do that. Page 5.
Does he have a printing press at his church? Or?
I don't know what they have or don't have, but he has the ability. He's created online a PDF document that he says is the exactly correct in every detail to the jot and tittle of the PCE.
So he can control that?
So he can print that. He could let other people print that. I am resisting the claim. I am not saying that he is making money on this. I don't know. So I am not going to say that he is. I don't know. Maybe they are some way, shape, manner, or form, but I'm not going to make that assertion.
So he hasn't printed any hard copies. It's just electronic.
Here's my understanding. I don't think he has printed any hard copies, but there are some independent presses in the United States, most notably church publications or church publishers, slightly different from local church Bible publishers, who are printing his text through their local church press. So you could buy in the United States from church publishers his PCE text in print. I don't know if he makes money on that. I have no idea. I'm not going to speculate.
I'm just referring to, he is the copy editor, and is that another thing he just assumed?
He edited the text and created the electronic text file, which we'll get to it more in a second. Yes. So it is being sold, okay? So that doesn't surprise me. Thanks for that detail.
Is he listed as a copy editor on those?
I didn't read that.
Okay, page 5. Now, here's my question. Is this an accurate description of his role? Is it accurate for him to say that he's a copy editor, okay? Verschoor's descriptions of his work in creating the PCE e-file show three distinct tasks. Number one, copy editing, typo, punctuation, cleanup within a setting. So he says that he did that. Number two, harmonization/standardization, choosing among and normalizing readings across multiple PCE printings to create a single reference text. And third, editorial innovation, at least one introduced style, example, Lords, with the lowercase possessive s instead of Lords with the uppercase possessive s. Okay? So he makes that change all through the PCE edition. So he's saying, I'm a copy editor, but he's making at least three different types of changes or three different categories of change. So look at the next point. Only task one is copy editing in a narrow sense. So that would be copy editing, typo, punctuation, cleanup within a setting. Only that task is truly copy editing. Look at the rest. Only task one is copy editing in the narrow sense. Tasks two and three are editorial consolidation and critical standardization across witnesses. Precisely why the PCEE file is best described as a harmonized construction, not a reproduction of any historic printing. Put another way, Verschoor did far more than copy edit the text. Does everybody understand what I'm saying? He is doing way more than just simply copy editing. Okay? Now, I send these notes every Friday, if I remember, or Saturday to Mike and Sylvia. They read through them and they make corrections to these notes. They send them back to me. I teach them to the class. If we catch anything that did not get caught between me reading it, them reading it, it's caught in here and then corrected, right? That's copy editing. We're copy editing a single set of what? Notes. We are not taking multiple versions of the multiple iterations of these notes and now trying to create a standard perfect form of the notes. I'm using that as an illustration. Everybody get what I'm saying? So what he's saying is copy editing is definitely way more than that. According to Verschoor, these quote variations in historic PC printings are not gross corruptions. Quote, none of these variations within pure Cambridge editions are gross corruptions and do not render useless vintage Bibles. So wait a minute. All these printed so-called vintage Bibles, are they exact matches to the PCE file that he created? But don't you have to have every jot and tittle in order to have the exact sense? Okay? However, it does show the need for a standardized text form, and the Bible Protector text is the go-to. Besides these, the present author did one new thing in line with actual English usage. So here he's admitting that he's innovating in his editing. So he's not simply copy editing. Okay? Besides these, this present author did one new thing in line with actual English usage, which was to put the possessive letter S in lowercase after an apostrophe when the word lords with small capitals is used, because it is a contraction, for the word his. The old usage of his can be seen with the King James Bible translators. It is, in fact, not always readily discernible in many historical printings whether a small capital S is being used anyway. In this typeface, it is more obvious, but in others, far less so. The author has not insisted upon it, but seeing the same use is elsewhere in modern times. Example, it seems to be the convention used in Norton's editing work also. We'll have something to say about that in a minute. And having no objection to it at the present time, and tactic is an tacit or willing acceptance, it stands. So is he declaring that his editorial change stands? Is that what he's doing? So has he edited the text beyond just copy editing? Has he changed the form of the word? He hasn't changed the word, but has he changed how the word gets written? Okay, so look at my points. In this passage, Verschoor is saying that although small, non-doctrinal variations appear across genuine PCE printings, these differences do not undermine the value of vintage PCE Bibles. Functionally, this is a verbal equivalence position. So I love it when he basically takes my position. Okay? Instead, they justify the need for a single, fully standardized text, which he presents as his own Bible Protector edition. He then acknowledges one intentional editorial choice he personally introduced, using a lowercase s in Lord's when Lord's uppercase s is in all capitals, arguing that this reflects historical usage and avoids typographical ambiguity, because this change aligns with practices he sees in modern editorial work and has met no objections, he treats it as an acceptable refinement within his standardized text. So, you will notice that he brought up Norton. Go back to page 5. Look at the quote. Last line, look at the parenthesis example. It seems to be the convention used in Norton. It's interesting when he thinks he gets to decide when he wants to make Norton an authority, because elsewhere he does not like Norton and he calls him a modernist. But now that he's adopting a similar authority, he's now marshaling Norton to justify his decision for how he edited the text, when elsewhere he doesn't want anything to do with Norton. I talk about that in the appendix. Page 6. Viewed against his own claims of purity, Verschoor's stance is internally uneven. Now here's why. He dismisses Oxford and Victorian Cambridge readings as unacceptable departures, yet waves away the same kind of differences inside the PCE stream as trivial press errors that do not matter. Why does he get to do that? Is he doing the same? So he's doing within the PCE stream the same thing he says you can't do with an Oxford or a Victorian PCE. Okay? He further front-loads the conclusion by assuming the PCE is already, quote, correct, then treats non-PCE variants as categorically wrong, while granting PCE variants a pass as noise to be harmonized. The inconsistency sharpens when he introduces his own editorial work, Lord's, lowercase possessive, and still presents the result as the purified standard, implicitly allowing change under his own hand that he rejects in others. I got a meme of him being very sort of nasty and ugly to me about being a hypothetical editor. Meanwhile, has he actually edited a text? Okay? In short, the framework tolerates variation within the tradition he favors, reclassifies it as correctable slip, and condemns similar variation outside of the tradition as corruption, a double standard built into the method itself. All right, any comments or questions there?
Well, you have full authority. You can.
When you're the guardian of the text, you guess you can do whatever you want to it.
Yeah. Good to be the king.
Nate? Did you have a comment?
I mean, obviously that's a little bit of a special pleading fallacy. So we do have a special pleading fallacy where you're right. He will say that if you have an Oxford, there are these slight orthographical differences, and that's impure. You can't have that.
Remember, he said that the Oxford change right. on the word spirit was a blasphemy.
Right. And then he later said, well, I have to change that now that everybody found it, basically. But so, yeah, it's completely against purity or his standards of purity for the Oxford to have orthographical differences from the PCE. But within the quote-unquote PCE line, they're fine as long as he's there to rectify them and they're all good and acceptable. So, yeah, that's special pleading. His point of view that he came up with is immune to the arguments he's making against the other position.
Correct. And that's obvious to me.
Right.
Okay. The three quotes stand out from the end of chapter 3. Okay. Here's the first one from page 65. Quote, the over 100 years of vintage Bibles, and by the way, we already talked about this before, has he now reclassified to the PCE under the term vintage Bibles? We talked about that reclassification when we looked at the preface to vintage Bibles. Anyway, I don't want to review all that. In over 100 years of vintage Bibles and their existence in the millions should be adequate proof that the pure Cambridge edition was not invented by the author, nor was it some concoction of the 21st century. Now, he's anticipating somebody like me coming along and objecting. How many of you, that's what I see here. So here are three comments I've made. Within chapter 3's framework, this quote reinforces a central apologetic move. Verschoor insists that the PCE is not his invention, but a long-standing, widely printed editorial tradition that predates his involvement by nearly a century. By pointing to, quote, over 100 years of, quote, vintage Cambridge Bibles and millions of extant copies, He argues that the PCE has an objective historical footprint independent of his own work. This functions rhetorically to counter the charge that the PCE is a modern construction or idiosyncratic theory, and it strategically anchors his claims in the material history he has been describing throughout the chapter. The editorial developments in the early 20th century, Cambridge's printing practices, and the consistency of certain readings across generations of Bibles, in effect, he uses the sure volume and longevity of these printings as evidence that the PCE has an established, providentially maintained text, rather than a 21st century innovation. Any comments there? No?
Didn't none of them have the official 12 readings until he constructed it?
What's that?
Didn't none of the pre-2000s?
No, they had what makes a PC a PC is that it matches his preference for the 12 reading list. But there's other things in those that differ from each other. That's why he had to edit a perfectly exact text, because even the ones that he says were PCE throughout the 20th century are not identical matches in every place of the text, which is a point Nate raised weeks ago. Next point. The argument that millions of 21st century PCE Bibles existed before anyone recognized the PCE does not logically prove that Verschoor did not invent the idea of the PCE, though it does serve as historically relevant evidence that the distinct readings long predated his work. Within chapter 3, Verschoor uses the mass existence of these so-called vintage Cambridge Bibles to push back against the charge that the PCE is a modern concoction, since their printings clearly contain the same characteristic readings he later collated. However, this numerical prevalence does not establish the PCE's correctness or normative authority, nor does it prove the concept was not constructed or framed by him in the 21st century. It only demonstrates that the readings themselves existed earlier, which, by the way, I demonstrated they existed in 1829 for an American publisher for 8 of his 12 readings last week. You remember that? It only demonstrates that the readings themselves existed earlier. Thus, reaching 10 million copies in 1966 does not specifically prove similar sized print runs for other editions. Thus, his million statement functions as a rhetorical inference based on Cambridge's long history and broad output, not on verified historical facts supported by evidence in Chapter 3. Maybe he's right, but he does not furnish evidence that he is in fact correct. Is everybody following me? All right, any questions before we go to the next quote?
So, I mean, would the claim really mean anything, even if he was right, that there's these millions of copies? Because,
no.
How is it not special pleading? Because Oxford's running millions
yes.
of copies.
How many millions of copies of the Schofield Reference Bible were printed by right. Oxford in the 20th century? I have no idea. I'd have to look it up.
Right. So why don't those count as millions of the correct readings?
And there's obviously Cambridge non-PCE readings that are probably reaching to those numbers too. So why does it matter just for the ones that he likes under the category of vintage?
Again, unless it goes back to a theological presupposition, which he denies is a reality.
Correct.
So if a non-Cambridge Bible matched perfectly his PCE, but it wasn't from Cambridge, then
right.
that don't count?
That's a great question.
Or is it that they just have to get lost?
Well, that's why I think the 1829 Edmund Cushing one from Massachusetts is a big deal, because it shows that 8 of the 12 readings were already in American printings, and the only differences that exist here. I can actually speak to that authoritatively, because I added it to the notes from last week. Actually, I can do it quicker by going here. So I'm in So this was Appendix B from last week. So here's the Edmund Cushing one. PCE confirming readings, Joshua 19:2. So there's 8 that are in line with the PCE, and there's only 4 that are not near, they're near PCE. The difference between fleeth and flieth in Nahum 3:16. The difference between further and farther in Matthew 26:39. The difference between capital spirit and lowercase spirit in Acts 11:28, and in 1 John 5:8, the uppercase spirit that he wants to be a lowercase spirit. Other than that, does the Edmund Cushing match what he wants to have as the select readings? So is there a substantive difference in meaning between further and farther?
No.
Is there a substantive difference in meaning between flieth and fleeth? And the preference to have spirit capitalized or not capitalized, as we've already seen, is determined whether he wants to admit it or not, because it coheres with his Pentecostal pneumatology about the work and ministry of the Holy Spirit, which is not a textual reason. It's his own preference based upon his theological biases. So if there was one that was an exact match, and there might be, we don't know. I mean, we'd have to look at every single one ever printed, you know, and I don't have time for that. I spent a lot of time looking at the stuff that I do look at, but like, we don't even have access to every single one ever printed. So I'm not totally sure what he might say about that.
Is he a self-appointed copy editor, or
yes,
does he have a degree in English or journalism, or?
No. No.
Inspired self-appointed.
He's a guardian of the PCE, Amy.
Oh, okay.
You are questioning his authority.
Pope of the
PCE. Well, I'm not going to say that. I'll leave those words in your mouth and let everyone else decide. But he clearly has some, he views himself as having some custodial authority over the text. Okay, and I think this next quote might speak to that. Page 7. Look at this second quote. The point of all this is to show that editorial accuracy, called purity, has been much pursued and sought, and that this attitude was the motivation behind the editing and printing of the Pure Cambridge edition by Cambridge and their making of vintage Bibles. Now, I'm not going to dispute that Cambridge probably was trying to have good editing in what they were doing. I mean, why? Okay. Although Bible believers in the 20th century had access to a range of King James Bibles from various publishers, providentially, they also had access to vintage Bibles. So I talked about this. So Providence did not bring me a PCE. It brought me a Scofield Reference Bible. So why is Providence not favoring me like it apparently favored him? Okay. Over the years, the rise of the modern King James Bible-only movement and some limited knowledge of differences between Oxford and Cambridge editions, there has been an overwhelming tendency among teachers and preachers to prefer the Cambridge. Maybe that's true, okay? But I need documentation to prove that, okay? How do you substantiate that? These were the everyday users of vintage Bibles, recommending vintage Bibles to others, despite the popularity of Scofield's notes in certain circles. So people are unaware of vintage Bibles. They are unaware of the PCE, but they're recommending the PCE to others because of those Scofield Bibles, Oxford Scofield Bibles, or whatever he's trying to ascribe there. Maybe he's not. I don't know. The Pure Cambridge edition has been around since before the First World War, from the time of Edward VII was king. This means that vintage Bibles were around from about a century before the BibleProtector.com website was made. Vintage Bibles printed by Cambridge have also been printed under the royal authority of its cum privilegio, and Collins printers have been printing the Pure Cambridge edition for decades as the royal printers in Scotland. While some Cambridge editions were printed under direct royal authority and crown patent from 1990 onward by Cambridge, besides this fact, some of the Royal Jubilee Bibles, such as from 1977, were also Pure Cambridge edition. It is a glorious fact that vintage Bibles were printed when Cambridge University Press was the crown's patentee, with the royal warrant displayed. Large print Cameo text editions from 1990 to 1999 were printed under the name and region of the venerable Queen Elizabeth II. Much respect should be shown the memory of the late Queen for greatness accomplished under her name. By this, it can be argued that the Pure Cambridge Edition is blessed by royal approval and is preferred, to the world with greater strength. So because Elizabeth was a good queen, these Bibles have more spiritual unction upon them or something. I'm not totally sure what he's saying. The Pure Cambridge Edition has also been pumped in the United States, particularly through American representatives of Cambridge University Press, example Macmillan. The Pure Cambridge Edition has also been printed for various missionary and Bible societies and for many organizations. It has also been published by other publishers, especially after 2007. So there's an answer to one of the questions. Various major and minor American publishing companies have been using the Pure Cambridge Edition. All of this ultimately the legacy of vintage Bibles, end quote, page 67 and 68. A lot was said there. Let's look at what I have to say and then you guys can respond. Within the framework of chapter 3, this quote functions as a capstone argument tying together the theological, historical, and rhetorical claims Verschoor has been building. Its purpose is to show that the PCE should be viewed not as a recent innovation, but as a long-standing, providentially preserved standard of the King James Bible, validated by a century of printing history and cultural authority. He first frames the entire history of Cambridge Bible production as a sustained pursuit of, quote, purity and accuracy, suggesting that the editorial decisions that produced the PCE were driven by the impulse that guided earlier Cambridge editors. So what about the 1829 Edmund Cushing Bible? I digress. He then argues that 20th century Bible believers, sometimes unknowingly, gravitated towards Cambridge Bibles and thus toward the PCE, which he portrays as a kind of grassroots providential endorsement. Finally, he bolsters the PCE's legitimacy by invoking royal authority, pointing out that many PCE printings carried the royal cum privilegio and royal warrant. So that's Latin for with privilege. Okay, we've talked about that in the past. And royal warrant, including editions printed under Queen Elizabeth II. Then I have a bracket that I added here. The force of this is weakened when one recognizes that Oxford and non-PCE Cambridge King James Bibles in the 20th century were also printed cum privilegio. So now what? The Oxford ones were printed cum privilegio. Other Cambridge ones that aren't PCE were printed cum privilegio. So what difference does that make? Okay. By highlighting international distribution, missionary use, and adoption by American publishers, he casts the PCE as both historically pervasive and divinely favored. In short, the quote asserts that the PCE's long, widespread, and officially sanctioned presence in printed form is itself evidence of its authenticity and authority. Well, why, on the same rules of argumentation, why would you rule out Oxford or other Cambridge non-PCE printings?
People generally buy whatever they can afford. It doesn't have to be this one or nothing.
Agreed. Any other comments there?
Can we download his text, edit it, and publish a new PCE under Providence?
Can't do that. Or you'll have a meme made about you.
Me and Alex have decided that's what we're going to do.
Look, I'm trying not to be nasty here, but at some point, does this get ridiculous? It gets ridiculous.
That one point where you talked about other churches were writing his or printing his work.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he allowing that? An author usually does not allow that because that's stealing his work.
Again, I think he is so invested in the premise that the PCE is the end time text for Christian restoration that he just wants it out there as far as it'll reach. I really don't pick up on that he's doing it for money. I don't. Now you guys can think that if you want. I don't think that. I think he really believes the theological stuff that he's basing all this on. Okay? Last quote, bottom of page 8 from chapter 3. The decades and millions of copies of vintage Bibles thankfully cannot be erased. Yet in response to the publicizing of the Pure Cambridge Edition, an official representative from Cambridge University Press in about 2010 was so alarmingly unaware of his own recent mountain of near-century vintage Bibles that they wrote, quote, "I am always puzzled when I see occasional references made to the Pure Cambridge Edition." So we've already talked about this quote, lessons back, page 9. And this passage for sure argues that Cambridge's own staff had forgotten the scale and history of the 20th century PCE printings, and he uses a 2010 Cambridge representative's puzzlement as evidence of its lost institutional memory. We observe similar points in lesson 276. Within chapter 3's framework, this serves to reinforce his larger narrative that Cambridge had produced PCE Bibles for nearly a century in vast numbers without consciously identifying them as a distinct edition, and that this unconscious preservation fits a providential pattern. So is Cambridge doing things that God is using providentially, but the only this one set of things they're doing is providential, the other set is not, even though they're continuing to keep the King James Bible in print? It all ends up to me in absurdities. It also positions Verschuer's work as a revival of a real but forgotten textual tradition, one Cambridge itself could no longer properly explain, thereby strengthening his claim that the PCE predates him and was not invented in the 21st century. So, in brief, Verschuer's framing is partly right, but overextended. He accurately cites a 2010 Cambridge comment showing unfamiliarity with the term Pure Cambridge Edition, and he credibly demonstrates that many earlier Cambridge printings carry the readings he later collated, which supports his narrow claim that the PCE profile predates him, authorship identification. However, his broader case leans on assertions he does not document, most notably the idea that PCE copies existed into the millions, which chapter 3 states but does not substantiate with edition-specific production data, and he overreads royal imprimatur or cum privilegio as unique validation of the PCE when Oxford and other non-PCE KJVs also were also printed under Crown license, weakening that line of argumentation. The crown privilege attaches to the printer, not to a specific editorial stream. So, that's chapter 3. We are not going to get all of chapter 4 and chapter 5. Anybody got any questions before we try to get some miscellaneous stuff and wrap up this lesson? Did you have something, Eric?
Who really cares that the Queen printed it? So what would be my question?
Yeah,
we know him to the teeth for that.
I don't know. Apparently that's part of his authoritarian
framework
of they're printing under crown license, and the Queen is obviously
the Bible verse about
where the word of the King is, there is power.
Yeah.
Now I don't know if he explicitly cites that somewhere.
I thought he did.
Maybe. I don't remember that, but...
Isn't royalty put in place by God, according to...
Divine right of kings?
Yeah. We should call him a modernist. It says, where the king is, there is power, not queen. Maybe he's a modernist.
We'll move on. So, real quickly about chapter 4. Chapter 4 of Vintage Bibles provides a detailed catalog of Cambridge's vintage King James Bibles running 52 pages, outlining dozens of editions from the 1910s to the 1950s, and documenting their sizes, typefaces, key textual markers, and production histories. It explains how to identify PCE printings, including near PCE editions that require minor corrections, and offers structured entries describing each Bible's physical dimensions, layout, topography, and variant readings. The chapter highlights major series such as the Pearl, Jasper, Cameo, Sapphire, Turquoise, Ruby, and Pit Minion editions. Those are all different editions Cambridge printed. Showing how they reflect Cambridge's evolving printing practices and type design. Ultimately, it serves as a comprehensive reference for collectors and researchers seeking to authenticate and understand the diverse range of vintage Cambridge Bibles. The following images are screenshots of the first entry from the catalog, taken from pages 76 and 77. The rest of the entries follow the same formatting. So if you look at page 10, so this is an example of the first one. This is how the catalog works. So he's got the print name, he's got other names, this, the size dimension, the volume, whether it's a full Bible or just a New Testament or something, lines per page, pages, does it include the Apocrypha, what's the typeface, what is the font size, is there a noted printer, who the printer was, and then he's got these, so this starting with Genesis 41:56. And running through this one right here about 1 Corinthians 5:14, he notes any variants that might be in this particular one. And then he's got the book names and paragraphs. And then if you go to page 11, he always provides a photograph against this, I guess, graph paper as a way of showing scale, the size of each one. So if you were to go to his document, that's in chapter 4, and it starts here on page 76, and it runs for 52 pages as he's cataloging all of these different ones, okay? Now, in your notes, go to page 12. At the beginning of chapter 4, so I'll show you what I'm talking about, this section right here. The beginning of chapter 4, where it starts, space here permits, okay? At the beginning of chapter 4, Verschuer states the following regarding hand-correcting PCEs with typographical mistakes in them. Quote, space here permits a list of those editions from the 1910s to the 1950s which nearly conform to the pure Cambridge edition, which may be wrong at Matthew 4:1 and or Mark 1:12, and perhaps some other minor places, these could easily be corrected by hand annotation and so amended conform to the pure Cambridge edition. So what does that say about the people who didn't know they could do this or that they should? He lists them out, the small Pica, the Minion, the Bavaire, and the Borges. I guess, again, I don't know the exact, Bourgeois, and the Bavaire. Then he says, the same in theory can be done for post-1985 Cambridge Bibles if they are only offering at at Acts 11:12, Acts 11:28, and or 1 John 5:8. Look at my points. We're going to probably have to end here. So again, I'm not going to get all this covered. You guys can read about chapter 5. Chapter 5 is just basically about physical descriptions and printers and typefaces and stuff that isn't necessarily relevant to the overall argument that we've been unpacking, but I did include it in the review. So he says, page 12, under the quote there from page 75. The quote acknowledges that some Cambridge Bibles from the 1910s and 1950s and even some post-1985 printings are almost PCE, but contain small isolated deviations that can be corrected manually, which reveals an important implication for the PCE argument. Rather than providing a single, flawless, uniform printed edition existed throughout the 20th century, the passage shows that the PCE functions as an idealized textual standard constructed from multiple Cambridge printings, not as a single historically perfect artifact. Because these editions require human correction to match the PCE, the quote subtly shifts purity from being an inherent property of a specific printed Bible to being the result of editorial judgment, thereby positioning the PCE as a curated text form rather than a continuously maintained Cambridge production. What?
Continuously forever. Because Cambridge printer still hasn't printed this.
Right.
It doesn't exist from Cambridge.
It exists in his mind that there are these near PC editions that all you have to do is hand